Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, everybody. I'd like to warmly welcome you to Eurocell's update for the first half of 2020, i.e., to the end of June. This update is a little later than normal, but given the impact of COVID-19, we felt it was very important to have a reasonable delay so that we could update you with a sensible period of trading since emerging from lockdown. However, our normal format will prevail, and I will update on the business and its various parts, and Michael will pull together all of the financial details. As Kelly has already told you, she's acting as a moderator on the line, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of the presentation. The slide presentation and commentary will be made available on the investor part of our website during today. The first half of 2020 is obviously overshadowed by COVID-19. In response to our interpretation of government guidelines, we temporarily closed the business from the 23rd of March. We took great care to ensure the business was left in a state of readiness, and particularly in operations, we adopted protocols normally used for close down at summer and Christmas. Circa 95% of all staff were furloughed, but senior management remained in role and worked to ensure that plans were in place for us to get a head start on our competitors immediately with a chance of a return to work. We started back on the 11th of May, albeit a phased start. Whilst Eurocell has been trading very well on all fronts up until lockdown, at the end of June, we found revenues down 31%. Michael will talk to the loss incurred, but clearly a loss of revenue and some prudent provisioning given the lack of clarity during the next 18 months. We worked very hard to preserve cash in the business and then worked with our suppliers and customers to further strengthen this position as we emerged from lockdown. Since our return, trading has been better than anticipated. New build is slowly returning to last year's volumes, but RI has been very strong, with customers undertaking a lot of project-type work. COVID-19 does not change our long-term strategy, but clearly there are some short-term imperatives, not least of which completing the warehouse, which is on track, returning to paying dividends, and ensuring the continued deployment of our very successful commercial strategies to take market share. As previously stated, we moved very fast to close down, but then immediately moved to planning what the return would be like within a COVID-19 context. To this end, we fully engaged with the workforce, and the joint effort has ensured that all sites were ready for a return to work and start production at the first opportunity. It is testament to our employees that all sites, without exception, have seen an improvement in operating efficiencies. Social distancing, continual monitoring, temperature checking, correct PPE are all to the highest standards, and until this time, we've not had a confirmed case of COVID-19 within our plants. Eurocell Recycle North was the last site to reopen, as we had stock and capacity elsewhere. By the end of August, this site had ramped up to 70% of normal production levels. On the cash front, we raised our bank facility to 75 million in March, and then raised 17.1 million in an April share placing with a view to continuing with the warehouse fit-out, whilst giving us a little more headroom should the need arise. We immediately moved to preserve cash through the deferral of all non-essential and discretionary expenditures. As you are aware, we canceled the final dividend for 2019, whilst making full use of all government support, including the job retention payments, of which we used 6.3 million. At this time, it's not our intention to take advantage of the 1,000 pound year-end grant, but I can confirm that only a handful of employees still remain furloughed, and this is mainly because of shielding issues. On to page four. Here we get the first view of trading in H1, but also the trading in the first two months of H2. July and August have been very robust, with the branches seeing excellent growth, but also a robust performance from profiles, given that new build, which is 35% of the profiles mix, started very slowly. Courting and investing in the right trade fabricators has seen these guys take substantial share as our competitors and their fabricators have struggled. As illustrated on the slide, the sales transformation happened very quickly from the beginning to the end of June, from 80% of prior year in week one to 105% by the end of the month. And that hasn't stopped. We believe we're through the period of pent-up demand, and we are seeing the consumer spending considerable money to do up their homes, and particularly trying to make more usable space to allow for home working, etc. We are still seeing considerable project-type work come through, and our made-to-order book is twice the size of last year. One of the major drivers of RMI expenditure in the past is house moves, so the recent and ongoing uptick in this area of the economy is most welcome. Moving to slide five, now it's time to briefly discuss the trading in our divisions, starting with Profiles. Through this period, we've continued to take share and believe we are still doing so. It's difficult to find market indicators, but we believe now we're at about 17% market share. Despite this, as we can see in the top right-hand graphics, revenues were hit very hard. We closed the doors for everyone very smartly, and our fabricator base followed directly. As previously said, the trade fabricators got up and running very early after lockdown, and have taken share from a number of our competitors. In a market where order books are normally circa 2 weeks, most trade fabricators have order books out to 6 or 8 weeks. There is such a shortfall of installers that windows requested now are unlikely to be installed until the new year. We've seen run rates for new build increase dramatically in the last 4 weeks, and we've won a significant amount of new work. Commercial work has only just recommenced, but it's starting to ramp up. Our initial thoughts were that working in a COVID-19 type environment would severely curtail operational efficiencies, but the opposite is true. Clearer processes, better flows, clear delineation between workstations have all led to an increase in OEEs, and they continue to improve. To confirm, we've not seen any of the costs associated with inefficiencies in production or logistics from prior years. And we continue to increase the amount of recycled use in our products. It's now up to 26%. And whilst it took a little time to pick up, we are now seeing free supply of in-feed stock. Moving to slide six, it is our intention to increase the awareness of our green credentials to our customers, given the heightened awareness of single-use plastics and also corporate ESG requirements. We are in the process of ratifying the savings in carbon so that we're able to utilise this benefit to achieve further type specifications. To further grow market share, we will continue to develop while simplifying our product range. We will continue to invest in our customers, increase the level of pull-through for our products with specification or branch sales. It is also our intention to gradually raise awareness of the Eurocell brand with consumers. Indeed, anyone who's driven down the M1 past Junction 28 recently would have seen the branding on the new warehouse shining out. It's rather difficult to miss. Lastly, with operations and logistics really stepping up to the plate, and with Nickel, which is our new warehouse, opening in early 2021, we are determined to make ourselves the easiest profile house to do business with. Still a way to go, but our new CEO and his team are making considerable strides in this direction. A lot of work has to go in up front in the improvement of processes and IT support, so if it's some time before the customer may see the benefits, it should be clear that the direction of travel and what needs to be done. Moving to slide seven, onto the building plastics or the branch network. As can be seen, the sales drop was not quite as bad as Profiles, but we're only talking about small points of difference. This reflects the fact that EBP was already performing very well in the run-up to shutdown. However, upon reopening, we have seen sales climb very strongly, up 20% on last year. Sales have been led by manufactured products, and this has enriched the mix, but we are now seeing the mix return to normal as project and MTO work, made-to-order work, really kick in and balances the portfolio. We are now at 208 branches. And after trying two larger footprint stores, we've taken the learnings from these and applied them to one of our smaller branches, which we have recently opened in Cheltenham. As the showroom has been appreciably increased, we're able to show all of our products, and this has been very well received by tradesmen and the public alike. The team spent the whole of lockdown planning the resumption of trading and came out all guns blazing with promotions, cashback days, customer re-engagement activities, and we are very pleased with the reception from our customers. We've moved stock into the branches to ensure availability and are currently trialling systems to make sure that our customers don't have to queue in the cold and the rain as the nights start to close in. Page 8, we are still planning on 300 plus sites, believing that we are starting to really outstrip both our national competition but also the independents. We've seen huge growth in conservatories and conservatory roofs. This growth has effectively reversed the slow declines which have been happening in this sector for the last 10 years. COVID connected, we've launched a range of garden rooms for customers who are thinking about long-term home working. We continue to see excellent growth of warm roofs as replacements for the glass roofs of conservatories, and we have recently launched the Vega system with effectively flat glass installed into the roof to allow more light in whilst maintaining the insulation properties of the roof. Everyone is looking to make more space in their houses or bring the garden in towards the house. Therefore, garden living products have increased in importance. Lastly, we are 2 weeks into a trial to sell windows and doors directly to consumers with products made for us by our fabricator brace. It looks very promising, but we will update at the full year. Now to slide 9. Thanks to the support of our shareholders with the cash raise, we've pushed ahead with the equipping of the new warehouse site. We have managed to work through most of the lockdown period and the project is on track. Offices can be occupied from the end of September, which gives us space to adapt to social distancing and increase dramatically the amount of parking available, which has always been a problem at the Alfreton site. The state-of-the-art 12-stinage high mobile racking is being erected and will be ready to transition from current warehousing facility over the Christmas period. The existing warehouse will allow us to increase our capacity on foiling and conservative roofs and allow for further expansion of extrusion capacity as we continue to take share. As you will all be aware, we believe this future-proofs our business for the coming years. Now I'm going to hand over to Michael to run through the financials.
Thanks, Mark. So let me start by going through the financial highlights on page 10. There are a lot of moving parts to these results. I'll pick up the major drivers on this slide before covering off the detail and our progress in Q3 as we move through the deck. So revenue down 31% is equivalent to a decline of 4% on a like-for-like basis. That's taking into account the period of closure by comparing average sales per trading day in each half. Gross margin down 4.3% reflects reduced production volumes and therefore a lower recovery of direct costs, as well as an increase in our stock provision, which I'll cover later. Underlying overheads down 17% includes government support received under the job retention scheme of $6.3 million and the impact of our cost reduction measures, partially offset by an increase to the provision for bad debts of $2.9 million. Taken altogether, that gets us to an underlying loss before tax of $8.6 million, in summary, driven by lower sales volumes and the impact of operational gearing. The reported loss was $16.5 million, and that's stated after a non-underlying or exceptional charge of $7.9 million, the major component of which is a non-cash goodwill impairment of $5.8 million. Net debt at the period end on a pre-IFRS 16 basis was $23.5 million, down $11.1 million from year end. This is a good performance and reflects the significant measures we've taken to preserve cash and the benefit of our share placing in April. Finally on this slide, we took the difficult decision in March to cancel the final dividend for 2019. We haven't proposed an interim dividend for 2020 because of the impact of COVID on our results for the first half. and we're also mindful of the substantial government support we've received. However, I can confirm that it is our intention to return to paying dividends in 2021. Turning to the full P&L on page 11. Mark explained the drivers of our sales, and I'll come on to the other components of EBITDA in a moment. But just looking below that line, D&A was 9.9 million, up on 2019 due to the increased capex, reflecting our recent investments in operating capacity, as well as the impact of operating lease rentals on new branches and our transport contract, which had been replaced by depreciation and interest charges under IFRS 16. And with our capex program and new leases, we expect D&A for the full year to be in the region of 21 million. Finance costs were 1.2 million, up on 2019, with higher net debt through the first quarter, as well as the increased IFRS 16 charges. And finance costs for the full year should be around 2.5 million. We recognised a tax credit on the underlying loss for the first half of 3.3 million. The effective tax credit rate of 38% for H1 is higher than the standard rate due to the benefit of patent box relief, whereas the effective tax rate on the exceptional charge, which I'll come on to shortly, is in line with the standard rate at 19%. With a return to profitability in the second half, we expect a full-year tax charge rate on underlying profits of around 18%, unchanged from the original guidance, and the tax credit rate on exceptional charges should be unchanged from H1 at around 19%. Moving down the P&L, underlying basic losses per share were 5 pence, and the position on dividends I've already covered. Moving on to the components of sales growth on page 12, total group sales on a like-for-like trading day basis were down 4% for the period, which includes profiles down 14% and building plastics up 3%. This reflects performance in the 11 weeks to the 20th of March, in line with expectations, with Q1 like-for-likes up 3% against a tough comparative from 2019. Then there's a period from late March to mid-May when the business is closed, followed by a good performance since reopening, with June like-for-likes just down 6% on last year. The estimated impact of COVID-19, shown in the chart, is a reduction in sales of 38 million, reflects the closed period, which resulted in 90 trading days in the first half of 2020, compared to 124 days in H1 2019. Finally, there's a small uplift of 0.5 million from 7 new branches opened in 2019-20. We have reduced the number of branch openings over the last 2 years, from a peak of 31 in 2017, to allow us to focus on improving the profitability of the existing estate. And notwithstanding the COVID impact, this has been successful. Moving on, we've seen a strong start to the second half, with group like-for-like sales for July and August up 12% on 2019. Profiles up 2% includes good contributions from trade fabricators, who are substantially focused on the strengthening RMI market. And although new build, which represents about a third of our profiles business, restarted slowly, run rates there are also now improving. Building plastics Q3 like-for-likes up 20% include a strong performance across our range of manufactured products and traded goods, as well as an excellent start for our new range of outdoor living products. So in summary, whilst COVID has had a very significant impact on sales for the first half, we prepared well during the closed period and have really hit the ground running in Q3. On to gross margin on page 13, moving left to right across the chart, the volume impact of 310 basis points is driven by COVID and reflects reduced production and therefore a lower recovery of direct costs. And I am pleased to say that gross margins have been improving in Q3 as volumes increase. Gross margin has also been impacted by 160 basis points as a result of an increase to our stock provision of 1.5 million. Following a full review performed during the closed period, we have rationalised our product range and eliminated some of the least profitable and least popular SKUs from the catalogue. As a result, moving forward, these products will not be marketed, so we increased our provision for slow-moving stocks. But this will create more space to promote the main runners and profit drivers and reduce complexity in the business. Moving along, we benefited from a small reduction in raw material costs of approximately 0.7 million in H1, incorporating the impact of a price reduction for electricity and some other raw materials. Continuing left to right, there's a small adverse impact of 40 basis points from recycling, which reflects lower volumes in H1 this year, as well as lower selling prices for recycled material and a smaller price delta with virgin resin. But it's important to remember that recycling acts as a hedge against higher resin prices. So although there's a small year-on-year negative impact on gross margin here, through the cycle, the economics of recycling are attractive. And the 4,700 tons of recycled material we consumed in H1 delivered an absolute gross margin benefit of well over £1 million. So that's the gross margin, and as I said at the start, now improving nicely as volumes increase in Q3. Turning to overheads on page 14, where overall we have a reduction of 17% or 8.5 million. First, the volume caption of 3 million primarily reflects the impact on direct labour and distribution of lower production and sales. But it is net of a small increase of 0.3 million incurred in respect of new branches opened in 2019-20, as well as the year-on-year impact of last year's April pay award, which is approximately 0.6 million. We had originally planned a general pay award to be effective from April this year too. However, with COVID, wage increases were restricted to those required by the minimum wage legislation, which in total are not significant. We have made use of the job retention scheme, through which we received payments of 6.3 million for the first half. There is also a further reduction in overheads of 1.1 million because furloughed employees were paid at 80% of normal salary levels. We have approximately 1,900 employees. At the height of lockdown in April, all but 100 were furloughed. Employers have returned to work on a progressive basis since we began the reopening process in May, and as of today, with volumes running ahead of last year, there is only a small handful still to return. We also received government support of £1 million in building plastics through retail property grants of £700k and business rates relief of £300k. Finally on this chart, IFRS 9 impairments of 2.9 million represent an increase to the bad debt provision. With the sector closing down abruptly towards the end of March, receipts from customers fell sharply. Several accounts now have a significantly worse aging profile than they did pre-COVID, and many are not yet back in terms. We therefore assess the level of credit risk to have increased materially as a result of COVID. In profiles, the increase of 1.6 million is largely a provision against a relatively small number of fabricators, whereas in building plastics, the charge of 1.3 million reflects risk spread more generally across a larger number of small accounts. We are focused on working with customers to collect the outstanding balance, but given the significant levels of risk and uncertainty, the increased provision is appropriate. Non-underlying or exceptional costs of 7.9 million are set out on page 15, which includes a non-cash goodwill impairment charge of 5.8 million in respect of Eurocell Recycle North or Ecoclass. It arises under an accounting model which now includes lower projected cash flows from ERN, reflecting a prudent assessment of the impact of COVID on customer demand and production volumes in the short term, as well as on selling prices for recycled material and the price delta between virgin and recycled compounds. We have a clear strategic objective to increase our use of recycled material, and we remain totally committed to that, building on our position as the leading UK-based recycler of PVC windows. Recycling delivers an economic advantage, with the cost of recycled compounds typically less than the price of the virgin equivalent. The environmental benefits are clear. Recycling enhances our product and business sustainability, and commercially, recycling resonates well with key stakeholders, including the new house builders and consumers. Looking forward, we expect sales growth will increase our demand for recycled material, and we will deliver that largely through the expansion plans for EON or Ecoplast that we set out on acquisition. Non-underlying costs also include a further bad debt charge of 0.8 million. This is in addition to the IFRS 9 impairment charges from the previous slide and represents the write-off of receivables in respect of customers who have entered an insolvency process as a result of lockdown. The right-of-use asset impairment of 0.5 million arises under IFRS 16 and represents the write-down of property leases to their value in use for a small number of medium-term loss-making branches, also estimated using a prudent assessment of the impact of COVID-19 on future branch cash flows. Finally, new warehouse dual-running costs represent rates, IFRS 16 lease charges, and other property-related costs incurred before the new site becomes operational, which we expect will happen early in 2021. Moving on to CapEx on page 16, for H1 CapEx was restricted to the new warehouse plus essential spend only. We invested 4.6 million compared to 8.8 million last year. That includes 2.6 million on the new warehouse, 0.7 million to increase recycling capability, and 1.3 million of other CapEx, which includes new and refurbished branches, IT, and other maintenance CapEx. It also includes the cost of our COVID-related safety measures. We now expect full-year CapEx for 2020 of 15 million, down slightly on previous guidance. Picking out the key items, there's 8.5 million to fit out the new warehouse, split 3 million on racking, 3 million for mobile plant, and 2 million on systems and project management. With this investment, we are modernizing our storage and picking solutions, providing a 60% increase in capacity and a safer, more productive environment for our employees. The design has also been updated to ensure that it is COVID secure. CapEx guidance also includes 2.5 million for manufacturing, which is mainly maintenance CapEx. Then there's 1.5 million in recycling, including capacity expansion and maintenance CapEx, demonstrating our ongoing commitment to this unique aspect of our business. And following the disruption to 2020, we are now targeting incremental consumption of around 2,000 tonnes of recycled material in 2021 compared to 2019. That represents about 15,000 tonnes of consumption, and even at today's lower delta would drive an absolute gross margin benefit of around £4 million versus virgin compact. Finally, there's £1 million for distribution, including new branches and branch refurbishments, and a further £1.5 million for other CapEx, primarily IT, and the cost of our COVID-related safety measures. In summary, we're continuing to invest in our business to create capacity for future growth and drive improvements in operating efficiency. Moving to working capital on page 17, where I'm very pleased with the net inflow of £4.8 million. Looking at the individual components, stock days are 79 compared to 76 at last year end, although stocks themselves are down 3.4 million since December. A reduction of 2 million in manufactured stocks reflects the impact of commercial selling activities restarting ahead of the phased manufacturing return. Traded goods are up by £1 million, which includes the impact of the new range of outdoor living products. And together, all other stocks are down a net £2 million, which includes the higher stock provision I covered earlier. As a reminder, during 2019, we completed a stock build program, adding approximately £5 million to finished goods to improve availability in our branches and to protect against Brexit-related risks. And looking ahead, it's important to note that this protection remains largely in place. On the sales ledger, debtor days were 27 compared to 37 at last year end, with the absolute balance of receivables down to 8.6 million since December, reflecting the volume impact driven by COVID and the higher bad debt provision. The payables reduction of 7.2 million since December is also a function of the COVID-related volume decline, but I'm also very pleased to say that in reporting this lower balance, all of our landlords and suppliers had been paid to terms as at 30 June. Looking ahead to the second half, We expect a small outflow from working capital as the business continues to ramp up through the busy season, and therefore for the full year, working capital should be close to flat, which is an improvement on our original guidance of an outflow of £5 million. Turning to the full cash flow on page 18, where we have all the components of a decrease in net debt of £11 million on a pre-IFRS 16 basis. I've been through the factors driving the working capital inflow, so now moving left to right across the chart, tax paid and other payments of £1.4 million includes the final settlement of our 2019 liability of £1.9 million, offset by an increase to our warranty provision of £0.5 million. Other outflows include payments for non-underlying costs of £1.1 million, which primarily relate to the new warehouse. CapEx payments of £4.9 million include the asset additions covered earlier, plus settlement of a year-end capital creditor of £0.3 million. And finally, there are financing charges of £1.2 million and cash received from shares issued of £17.6 million, which includes the net share placing proceeds of £17.1 million and SAYE scheme cash received of £0.5 million. So this all adds up to the pre-IFRS 16 net debt decrease for the period of £11.1 million. IFRS 16 adds £52 million to debt at 30 June, which is up for £34 million at the end of last year, due to the inclusion of our new transport contract and the new warehouse. And I should say here that the old transport contract was not in scope for IFRS 16 in 2019, as it had less than a year to run. Overall, I've been pleased with our cash flow management during this very challenging period. We increased our debt facility from £60 to £75 million in March, and from the outset, we took decisive action to conserve cash, which has been effective. We were also grateful to receive support from investors for the share placing in April. So our balance sheet and liquidity position are strong, and we're operating well within the terms of our financial covenants. This provides us with security, flexibility and options for the future. So finally, before handing back to Mark, I wanted to update our financial guidance for the new warehouse, which is very similar to the information we provided at the prelims in March. I covered the CapEx for 2020 of £8.5 million earlier, a small increase on last time due largely to an updated design to make the site COVID secure. In terms of the P&L for the full year, there will be extra costs of approximately £2.5 million, including IFRS lease charges, rates, depreciation and interest. We expect £2 million of that will be classified as non-underlying, which are the pre-occupational costs. So that's a further £1.2 million exceptional charge in H2. Occupation of the offices will be a little later than planned, again due to COVID, but there's no change to the overall timeline for operations, which are expected to commence early in 2021. Looking forward, from next year onwards, the net operating costs of the new site will be approximately £1 million per annum. This is inclusive of labour and other savings arising from more efficient picking and transport operations. However, this net cost should be more than offset by the positive impact from efficiencies and longer-term sales growth unlocked by the investment. Finally, the table top right summarises the other 2020 updated financial guidance I provided earlier, which I hope is helpful. And with that, back to Mark.
Thank you very much, Michael. So we're now on slide 20. We normally put the market data at the front of the presentation as a background to the prior 6 months. But in this presentation, the real call is what is going to happen to the end of the year and through to 2021. And we've used the CPA data. The CPA data comes from a mix of merchants and manufacturers and is a fair representation of what is anticipated to happen in the marketplace. And if you look on the box on the right-hand side, the total construction market, depending on when it's a V-shaped, W-shaped or U-shaped return, or even a swoosh, sees that the whole of the construction sector to be down between 6 and 14% on 2019 volumes. But we are exposed to RMI, and the CPA's conclusion is that 2021 is likely to be down 10 through to 20% on 2019's volumes. Whilst new build is a big part of the profile sales, across the rest of the business, we are dependent on RMI. We cannot defy gravity, and consumer confidence could become undermined under the next few months, but we do not hold with the lowest forecast of a 14 or a total decline or a 20% decline in RMI. However, our planning is around a cautious approach to 2021, ensuring that we are able to take share where we can, but keeping the overheads low so there are no unnecessary costs. You'll know that I've skirted around the issue where RMI will eventually run out for 2021, but that's because we really haven't a notion at this time, and your guesses are as good as ours, probably better and more informed. We do think there will be a decline on 2019, but the size is still to be determined, and we will have a better idea as we see the trading over the next couple of months. So moving on to slide 21, in summary, we reacted very fast to the COVID-19 situation, but spent our time planning our return, which has been executed very well indeed. We are seeing an enhanced flexibility from our workforce and a real binding together to make the most of this opportunity developing from COVID-19. The H1 results were severely impacted, but we were prudent, and H2 is off to an excellent start with very strong sales in RMI. And every business, including Vist, The Doors, Recycling, S&S Plastics and Hardware, all seeing excellent growth and playing their part. We are clear on our short-term imperatives, continuing to drive market share and pulling through our product with specifications, ensuring we deliver the benefits of our new warehouse site, and returning to paying dividends as soon as reasonably possible. The outlook for 2021 is very difficult, with increased unemployment and rising debt. However, house moves are up, and that always drives RMI, and all order books are very strong, and people still need to expand their houses. Where there have been second lockdowns, they haven't materially impacted our fabricators, and they've continued to trade very well through that period, with the second lockdown basically just closing down social areas, as opposed to industrial. The outlook is uncertain. Whatever gets thrown at us, we believe we have the team to respond and continue to take share, and will better our competitors. I'd like to thank you for your time, and at this moment I'd like to start taking questions which will be controlled by Kelly. Thanks again for listening and your time.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad now. If you change your mind, please press star followed by two. And when preparing to ask your question, please ensure your phone is unmuted locally. And for those joining via the webcast, please submit your questions via the viewer screen below. So we have our first question from Robert Eaton of Goodbody. Robert, please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone. Hope you can hear me.
We can hear you, Robert. Thank you.
Hope all is well. Kind of two broad questions. The first is, what are you generally seeing around pricing in the market from your competitors? And, you know, how are your competitors positioned, you believe, in terms of, you know, their own supply chain, their own ability to service customers in these difficult times? And, you know, is that resulting in, you know, different pricing strategies or more aggressive pricing? Or what are your expectations around that? Because my sense is with other industries that, you know, through April and May and June, you know, the focus of businesses was just, you know, closing and opening their respective businesses in an orderly fashion, and health and safety was obviously paramount, and, you know, pricing was almost put on the back burner. So it's just kind of a general question around pricing strategy for yourselves, competitors, what you're seeing on the ground, where are the stress and strains among that competitive set. And the, kind of the second broad area is just around raw materials. What are you seeing on virgin resin pricing at the moment, and what are your expectations for the coming period, quarters. And in terms of the recycled material, are you, with the improvement, I think you said on the call you've seen improvement in collection rates. With that improving, are you seeing any change in the pricing of recycled material?
Okay, thank you for your question, Robert. Let's do the pricing ones first of all, and competitive supply. The market, as we've come back, the fenestration industry has been very buoyant. No surprise about it. I think there's a lot of pent-up demand. The industry has struggled to cope with that demand, and therefore there has been no need to do anything exciting on pricing. In fact, pricing has been maintained. We haven't seen any lifting of prices apart from one of our competitors in the door space who was absolutely vilified by, you know, on LinkedIn and social media and such like to such an extent that they lost a lot of customers. So, there's enough demand to think that we can be robust on pricing. We haven't had to drop prices anywhere and are holding firm. We're being selective with new customers we take on because, again, you know, supply of all materials is tight, right, I suppose. So we could definitely be supplying a lot more doors into the market right at this moment, but we just haven't got a robust supply line. It's really struggling. I think all competitors are struggling right at this moment. Some have struggled just to come out of lockdown. I don't think they were very well prepared. And maybe they didn't get the cash in and the such like. So there's a couple of people who have gone out of business. And we've picked up some good share from those, particularly some trade fabricators where we picked up some good share. As regarding raw materials, again, that is very tight. The resin market in the UK is the lowest price in Europe. So the resin suppliers have been deliberately constraining supply into the UK, and things have been tight all the way along here. They are desperate to get a price increase through. It would be, I'd have to be very cynical on this front, but call me cynical. Our largest supplier of resin put through a force majeure this week, and that was to inform us that supply was going to be even more constrained because one of their VCM, which is the raw material for making PVC, their Norwegian site had had a lightning strike and it had gone down. They'd lost 5 or 6 days production, so they were constraining volume into everybody. So I think that will what will emerge from that is some general price hikes. It is hand-to-mouth on the supply of resin. We don't need huge amounts of uptick volumes right at this moment, but we think we've secured what we need to get by through to the end of the year. Clearly, recycling is in high demand for us, and you know, we also supply the market elsewhere at the moment. We struggled to get in beef supply at the start of the unlocking period. And the reason for that was just people weren't fitting windows, so there wasn't, there weren't those windows to come back into our business. But that has now been resolved, and we're managing to get everything we need back into the businesses. And we're effectively managing price to ensure that we get as big a delta between the recycled product that we produce and the virgin product that we're bringing in. Yeah, but as Michael said previously, we think of this as a hedge, and I think as you've pointed out to me, Robert, there's not many businesses by doing green actually enhance their bottom line, so we are very mindful that we want to do as much recycling as we possibly can. Does that answer your question, Robert?
It does indeed, and if you wouldn't mind if I can have just one further question before I pass it on. In the statement, you talk about, you know, you have done, or you've optimized certain things, and this period has given you the opportunity to do that. Would you care to kind of quantify what that means in terms of costs, and are they ongoing savings that we can assume?
It's not often you get a chance in business to basically re-sculpture or lay out all of your lines and the such like. Because you've got free time and there isn't any production requirement on those. You get a period at Christmas, but that's a week or so. We had a much longer period here, so where we had senior management in, we then brought in some of the senior engineers, and we laid out lines in a way that we've been wanting to do for a long time, so really improving the flows through the line, and also to increase what's the mileage of any product going through our product lines, and having, you know, very focused workstations, so just flowing from one end to the other, as opposed to some of our processes were horrible in terms of, you know, product would have to double back a couple of times. So that is what has improved all the operating efficiencies. They're ongoing and will definitely enhance the returns in the future. We're expecting them to do so, but we haven't put a figure on it yet, Robert, unless Michael wants to comment further.
The only bit I would add in terms of a number, Robert, is you will have picked up in the statement there is a small headcount reduction, which has come out of improving streamlining the organisational structures, if you will. That's around 50 heads. It is across the business. A significant proportion of it will be fulfilled by vacancies which will no longer be filled. Those 50 heads would give us ongoing fixed cost savings of, you know, circa £1.5 million, let's call it that. That would recur too, alongside the other operational efficiencies that Mark mentioned. And, you know, as Mark said, who knows where demand will be next year, but if there is to be a decline, then, you know, those efficiencies will help mitigate some of the impact of that.
On slide 5 in the bottom right-hand corner, we showed the OEE of the operational equipment business in our extrusion plants. And you'll see in H1 we're up to 76%, which is the highest it has been for some number of years. I can tell you that has increased still further, and we're around 78.2 at the moment. So that's increasing all of the time. I think when you look at those sort of returns, that is reflected into the door, plant, boiling, everywhere around. And then you also take into account the fact that we're not seeing the inefficiencies or the cost around inefficiencies that we've experienced in the last couple of years. It's a very good story, Robert.
That's great. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Aynsley Lehman of Canaccord. Aynsley, please go ahead.
Great. Thanks very much. Morning, Michael. Morning, Mark. Two questions from me, please. So start with obviously you had a stellar kind of recovery in July and August, but there is quite a big difference between the profiles and the plastics, 2 and 20%. Just wonder if you could explain that difference a bit more. I assume it's kind of new housing lagging behind. So any more colour you've got on those recent trends and how you're managing to take good market share in plastics? And then the second question, given that good start in the second half, would it be fair to assume that, you know, at this point, with the visibility you've got, the order book, and the good start, you'd expect H2 profits to be at least as good as what they were in the prior year? And growth margins, you say they're recovering. Should we expect them to get up to close to 50% in the second half? Thanks.
Thanks, Ainsley. So let's just talk about the difference between profiles and EBP, and I'll let Michael talk to the second half. Profiles now has new builders about 35% of its total mix. Commercial's probably another 5% of that. Both of those sides are growing as a part of the business. And it is RMI that has been really pushing on. So I think the fact that profiles have been able to achieve volumes in excess of last year without really new build coming to the party too fast, it just shows that we have really developed and invested in the right trade frame fabricators who have picked up significant market share on our behalf. I think as new build continues to grow, we go forward and we continue to see all the sales being driven by Help to Buy. We will see, and we are seeing right at this moment, our new build fabricators taking the sort of stock from us as they would have done at this time last year. So we're already starting to see that now. And that will really feed through into the figures. The only other thing there is to manage the volume that's going through the plant because it is significant, and we're seeing a big mix towards foil products, and to make sure we don't get any inefficiencies, we have been lengthening lead times on our products. In line with the rest of the marketplace, which means that, you know, Orders may be a slight bit depressed by that, but the underlying run rate is growing the whole time at Ainsley, so we're pleased with that. EVP, I just think it's testament to the team and the great job that they've done. They spent the whole lockdown doing preparation for their return. They came out very fast and very aggressively. We have, not on price, I might say, just in terms of campaigns to entice our customers back to us very early. And also, they've done an awful lot of work with new products and getting them launched very effectively into the marketplace. And we've had customer acquisition teams, which is a new feature for us, going around and picking up some of our competitors' fabricators. So we've done a great job on that front. And I can't see why we're going to back off there. I'm very encouraged by what's happening with conservatories. That has been a dying sector. We're now putting an awful lot of work in. I mean, the conservatory roof sector, for us, for example, is about 50% up on last year. So we're now seeing the revival of this sector. We think there's an opportunity here to continue to drive this. So we're very pleased with that. And we see that if things get a little bit tighter, it'll be the independents that will struggle. There's still about 1,800 branches which are owned by independent owners. They will struggle for cash. And I think us having a fuller offering will just continue EBP's growth. And I think sort of things like investing, I don't know, those of you that will have been to Tool Station or Screwfix sites recently, if you've been in the rain, you will see all of their customers queuing out in the rain at the moment. Well, we are trialing a system in 7 or 8 branches right at this moment, which basically means they've got virtual queuing, and we just call them into the branch when they're able to come in, still maintaining social distancing guidelines, but effectively staying in their vans and working until we call them in, so their the frustration of getting absolutely soaked and freezing cold will be mitigated to all intents and purposes. Michael, do you want to talk to the second half, please?
Yeah, so 2 points. I'll start with the gross margin one. Absolutely, Ainsley, it would be fair to say that gross margins for H2 should be at around 50%. Actually, if you look back at the second half of last year, you'd say, well, maybe why not higher? But what we're doing in saying 50% is building in an element of prudence around resin pricing, given the tightness of that market that Mark mentioned. And on that basis, yes, you're absolutely right. It would be fair to assume, based on the visibility that we have today, that PBT for the second half of this year should be a little bit ahead of the second half of last year.
And just to say on that front as well, it is very unusual for trade frame fabricators to have order books of 2 weeks. That's like, and I did tell you that if you want windows installed, you want a particular certain roof, you'll struggle to get them done this side of Christmas, which rather suggests that our fabricators have got long order books. And so that should encourage us to the end of the year, even if there was a catastrophic decline in consumer confidence.
Thanks, all very clear. Thanks very much. Yeah, all very clear. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Clyde Lewis of Peel Hunt. Clyde, please go ahead.
Morning, Clyde.
Morning, Mark. Morning, Michael. Three if I may as well. Firstly, on the market share gains, can you sort of, I mean, obviously you've very clearly given the percentage you think you're at now. I mean, could you talk a little bit about, I suppose, how you can get that to, you know, 20%, and can you get it up to sort of 25% over the medium term, just in terms of how, I suppose, the moving parts would sort of sit within your thoughts. I mean, clearly it's a medium-term prospect, but if you could just talk a little bit about that. And the second one, or second and third ones I had, I suppose, were, you know, the window sales that you're trialing up in, I think, the Northwest. Again, what sort of scale do you think that could have, and how the fabricators that you're dealing with up in that market are sort of reacting to that? I mean, early days, but just could give us a little bit more sort of help in terms of sort of what sort of scope that could deliver for the business. And a similar sort of question, I suppose, in terms of the outdoor products, you know, in terms of the garden rooms, just in terms of what sort of scale, you know, that sort of business could sort of deliver. And I think, Michael, you sort of talked about sort of products that you know, old stock that wasn't moving quickly. Could you sort of just, I suppose, talk us through what sort of products those those were and why weren't they moving? You know, what changed on that front?
Okay, thank you, Clive, very much. Market share gains. So, as you are aware, the strategy that Eurocell employs is basically, or deploys, is to create pull for our products. And we're talking about profiles at the moment. And what that is going to architects and specifiers and making sure that they're using our products as opposed to our competitors. We have the largest sales force in this area, and we continue to invest in technical and, you know, CPD seminars and all of that sort of stuff. So, whereas most of our competitors have stopped doing that for the most part. So there are a number of new house built users of our product where the specification they put out for purchase is actually a Eurocell specification. They haven't invented their own. They use ours. So it's our materials that can go onto that. Other people can emulate them, but it's our specification that pulls through. In commercial buildings, we have a case for using PVC windows, particularly in things like student account accommodation, where they would normally use aluminium windows. And that has been very, very successful as people like Unite and Wilmot try and drag down the prices as much as they're able to. And PVC is a very interesting opportunity because it reduces the energy, improves the energy efficiency of the building, but also lets more lighting as well. And we're also seeing that in that regard, there are a number of fabricators who are moving across from competitors because Eurocell is so widely spec'd, particularly in new build. And that will continue. If you want to be in new build, you should be really making sure that you've got Eurocell available to you. We're also seeing some more installer communities come on. So there are installers out there who all they do is buy in windows and install them into places like new build. And those guys increasingly coming over and buying from our trade frame fabricators, seeing more growth. And then there was one significant failure this year so far, which was Custom Made, who are a significant trade frame fabricator whose private equity partner run out of interest in funding them anymore and basically exposed them to the marketplace where they promptly fell over. We've just picked up a large majority of all of the business they've supplied at, you know, at strong margins. So I think we can just keep the pressure on. I don't think Duraflex under Hilco are having too good a time of it right at this moment. You know, another one of our competitors, who I think most of you will know, had a significant flood on their Telford site, which means they're miles behind with all their foil products. There's always opportunities here to keep the squeeze on our competitors and just deprive them of a little oxygen, and then I think we will continue to gain share. For window sales, I'm going to take the Fifth Amendment on this one. The trial is 2 weeks in right at this moment. We know what the margin development is, and we know that what it's doing is it's developing more pull through our fabricators. Our fabricators are very used to supplying windows into the marketplace that they are the source of at the moment. And whilst that was controversial 4 or 5 years ago, it definitely isn't controversial anymore. And at the end of the day, all I have is 17% market share, so 83% of all the windows that are installed in the UK are not ours. So it's very unlikely that we're going to be causing too much collateral damage in the short term. Can we move to 25%? It'd be nice to think so, wouldn't it? But not at the cost of price or margin, right? So we'll bide our time on that. Outdoor products is just moving all of the decking products. We see huge demand on fencing products, particularly with the storms coming through and such like, but people trying to enhance their gardens. Garden rooms is a product we launched about 6 weeks ago. We've sold plenty of them. The selling prices are sort of 8,000 to 14,000, 15,000, although there has been one quote for the £32,000 one. So they're a nice earner, but people are just getting their heads around how they move forward. And I think there's also on outdoor products, but just room extensions. You know, it's impossible to get a builder at the moment. It's an opportunity for us to deliver sort of extensions of the box, which is conservatories or stuff using sit panels and such like, and all of that is being worked on at the moment.
Just on the stock provision, yes. So if you went back to sort of 2016-17, we significantly increased the range of particularly traded goods that we sell, and that was all about, you'll remember, the branch expansion program, and in doing that, being a one-stop shop and taking as much of our customers' share of wallet as was possible. And unquestionably, that was successful. If you think of the sort of the traded goods idea, is anything that the roofline installer or the window installer or the jobbing builder, typical branch customers, need to do their job. And in addition to the obvious ones like silicons and sealants, one of the products that we introduced was wood battening, because roofline is put up using wood battening, and I think Urasell have had a sort of a problem with selling wood, being a PVC business historically, and that seemed to us to be a bit of a nonsense, and wood battening has been a very successful product since it was introduced. On the other hand, there are some products such as buckets, ladders, cleaning materials that haven't gone quite so well, and those are the ones I'm talking about now, where we've got a sufficient history of sales to say that actually these aren't going to drive profitability. They take up a lot of space, and that space would be better utilized, particularly with manufactured products. You've seen the sort of demand levels and sales levels that we are driving forward at the moment. So there's a little bit of a simplification theme going on here, and taking out some of the things around the periphery and focusing on the core. And I think you probably see that theme running through our business going forward.
Sorry, just one more thing, just thinking about selling windows to consumers. That project is called Urasell Home. You're right, it's taking place in the northwest. Just for clarification, we've included the costs for Urasell Home, which are, not significant, but we're doing it properly. But we've included no upside from any sales either in this year or in our forecast for 2021, because we don't really want to be doing, we don't want to be driven to do this any faster than we think we can do, and doing a great job on it. So we're going to see what we've got, and we'll report back to all of you guys at the end of the year and where we think we can take this.
Thanks, guys. Can I just follow up on the outdoor products? Could you give us some sort of idea as to what sort of revenue you're generating from that? Because it's potentially a very different sort of customer decision for some of those sort of projects. Would it be as much as...
I can calculate them out, because I don't know exactly what the number is.
I'm not sure, Clyde, actually. I'll come back to you on the absolute number there. I don't want to give you a number that I'm not comfortable with.
Okay. No worries. Thank you.
Thank you, Clyde.
And just to follow on the stop point as well, I think the ones that we're taking out here, I think our customers are getting them on Amazon, things like cleaning materials and buckets and the like. I think that's why those products have slowed down.
We now have two questions from our webcast audience. The first question is from Andy Hansen. He has two questions. The first one being, just want to be clear, on the dividend, do you mean it will be reinstated in calendar year 21 or financial year? And the second question is, can you provide some colour on volume and pricing in July and August, and also input cost pressures and the potential to pass these on? Thank you.
So just on the dividend, what we mean by that is the default assumption should be that we would start to pay dividends with an interim for 2021, which would be paid in October. We will, of course, react as circumstances change and keep a watching brief over all of that.
On pricing, Andy, as I explained earlier on, the market is very tight for raw material supply, and there's a lot of demand for product which a number of people are struggling to keep up with. Indeed, we're being very tested, but we've made some lead times to make sure that we don't pick up any inefficiencies. I think there's an opportunity to put pricing into the marketplace and to reflect raw material increases if necessary. I just think it's not empathetic to do it right this moment. You know, there's a number of people out there, our customer base, who's struggling to get their cash in and struggling with pricing they put in before lockdown and things like that. And these are the very customers that, should there be a catastrophic fall in consumer confidence, for example, these will be the customers that we'll be calling upon to support us through some more difficult times. So if there were going to be, I don't think there's a problem moving price increases to the marketplace with such demand. I just think it's inappropriate and insensitive to do it right at this moment, and we'll wait to see how next year pans out when obviously we'll be looking to recover any costs that we incur. Thank you, Kelly.
Okay, the next question is from Toby Thorrington. He has three questions, the first one being, ex-insolvencies, what criteria are being used to determine preemptive bad debt provisioning? The second is, are there any supply chain constraints in either traded goods or recycled materials? And the third is, are there any outstanding government cash payouts outstanding? For example, furlough receipts in and tax deferrals out. Thank you.
Right, well, just on the bad debt provisioning, to give the full answer there, the exceptional charge of 0.8 million is customers who have gone bust or started insolvency proceedings during the lockdown period, or as a result of the lockdown period. So that one's pretty clear. And there is the one account that Mark mentioned, Custom Made, is the substantial majority of that £800,000 write-off. In terms of the increased bad debt provision of £2.9 million, which has gone through the underlying P&L, that is... a large degree of that is driven by the underlying accounting rules. We use an expected credit loss model under IFRS 9 to estimate bad debt experience based on history. But we also take a step back and look at the state of our ledgers. And unquestionably here, we've been influenced by the deterioration in aging that we've seen as a result of the COVID situation. So I think I mentioned in the presentation, if you look at the profiles business, you know, overall in profiles we've got around 400 customers, and 30 of those customers would give you more than 50% of the business. The increased bad debt provision in profiles is probably more driven by that, just taking a step back and looking at the individual accounts and making an assessment of them. And I would emphasize that it is a prudent assessment of them. £1.6 million in the profiles bad debt provision, again around half of that is in respect of a single account. On the building plastic side of the business, where we have literally thousands of customers, the provision is much more driven by the statistical analysis underpinned by the expected credit loss model. And there we are really looking at a deterioration in aging as a result of the COVID situation. I would put all of these incremental bad debts at the heart of all of them is what's happened through COVID. It's just the way that the accounting rules work. You'll be aware that the FRC has been all over this kind of stuff. It's only those that have gone bust that we are allowed to put in the exceptional column. And where it is just a change in our risk assessment driven by the ECL model, that goes in underlying. I would stress that it is a prudent approach that we've taken here, one that we believe is absolutely appropriate, but one also that our auditors encouraged us to adopt.
On the supply chain, I would just say that all parts of the supply chain are creaking. It doesn't matter whether it's resin supply of foils, chemical additives, glass supply, it doesn't matter, hardware, everybody's creaking. They went from total shutdown to, you know, the market seeing huge volumes landing with us very, very quickly and huge demand. It is a real pain trying to keep up with all of the customer orders right this moment from the point of view of managing the supply lines. We're doing pretty well at that, but it's not without its difficulties. I think it'll gradually ease as people get on top of this volume, but there was a degree of reticence to unfurlough too many people in case the demand that we saw was just was pent-up demand and then was all going to collapse. I think where we are now is because not everybody has been able to deliver into the marketplace in a timely manner, lead times have been lengthened, there's not enough installers around and the such like, that should give us all hope that this order book will carry on through until at least the end of the year and maybe into the early part of next year. Mark, could you just want to touch base on the furlough part?
Yes, so in terms of support income, whether it is government grant or furlough income, all of that has been received. So there are no outstanding receivables in respect of that government support. In terms of taxes, the only payment that we would still need to make is we deferred our Q2 VAT payable as allowed by the government, and that fits within the current creditor balance and will be paid in accordance with the government's rules in the first quarter of 2021. So we have a clean position with respect to all of the support.
Thank you, Toby, for your question. Toby, back to you.
So as a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, to ask any further questions, please press star followed by one on your telephone keypad or type them into the viewer on the bottom part of your screen. It doesn't look like we have any further questions.
Okay, thank you very much indeed, everybody, for your participation and spending time with us. And we look forward to catching up with you further during the coming week on the roadshow and such like. Thank you very much indeed for your help as well, Kelly.
Thanks, everyone.